his eyes. The children of Israel in drunken debauchery, dancing around a golden calf, worshiping an idol made with men's hands. And he was so overcome by rage and anger that he threw down the Ten Commandments. They burst on the ground. He charged in among them, tried to break it up. They would not stop their partying. So Moses called out in Exodus 32:26. He called out, "Whoever is on the Lord's side, come to me." And the sons of Levi gathered around Moses, and at God's command, they drew their swords and they went in and they broke up the party, killing about 3,000 men from among their own people. And they broke up that party. Moses said, "If you're on the Lord's side, step across this line." Why? Because the people of God had crossed the line in the sand themselves. It is the fact that there are two uses of the phrase "line in the sand." There are two ways that we use that phrase. March the 5th, 1836, Colonel William Travis took his sword and he drew a line in the sand and he asked whoever was willing to die with him in defending the Alamo, step across that line. And that's basically what Moses was saying. Whoever's on the Lord's side, come to me. Well, there's another phrase, another use of that phrase, line in the sand, and that's a line that must not be crossed. I'll go this far and no farther. And the children of Israel had crossed the line in their drunken party, and they paid dearly. They crossed the line that they should not cross. I want to ask you this morning, can you think of a worse feeling in the whole world than to be convinced that you're out of options? That there's no way out, that there's nothing you can do? You know, there are people in prison today who felt like they were out of options, and so they embezzled from their company, or they robbed a bank, or they committed murder. There are people who are no longer alive today. They committed suicide because they believed they were out of options. Maybe you are on the verge of giving up on a marriage, or on a dream, or even giving up on life itself because you believe you're out of options. Today I'm beginning a four-lesson series that I'm calling Out of Options. And it's going to conclude next Sunday night. So you're going to want to be back tonight for lesson two that I'm calling You Can Take the Heat. You Can Take the Heat. Today's lesson is simply There's a Line in the Sand. Now, there are some real situations in the Bible with real people and real situations where folks appeared to be out of options, but they learned a valuable lesson, one of the most valuable lessons anyone can learn, and that is with God, there's always an option. There's always an option. No matter what your situation, no matter what your circumstance, you may be out of options, but God never is. God never is. A 14-year-old high school student is going to teach us that today. His story takes place about 2,600 years ago, around 605 B.C. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem. He besieged it, and the Bible says in Daniel 1, verse 2, "And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand." Babylon didn't conquer Jerusalem. God gave them Jerusalem. He gave Jehoiakim into his hand. One of God's promises to the children of Israel was very simple. The promise was if they would obey him and follow him, he would bless them. But if they disobeyed him and refused to follow him, rebelled against him, he would turn their palaces into prisons. And they would exchange the comforts of freedom for the chains of bondage. And that's exactly what happened. And they've been warned. They had fair warning. Over and over again, God sent his prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Habakkuk, and others, to plead with Judah to repent and do right. But their words fell on deaf ears. And God keeps his promises, we know that, both the good and the bad. Both the promises of blessing and the promises of punishment. God keeps his promises always. Jerusalem had been captured by a Babylonian army. A pagan king, commander-in-chief of a pagan army from a pagan country, had conquered God's chosen people, and they were taken into captivity. So the king told Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, "Bring back some of the people of the of the land of Judah. I want you to bring back some of their royal family, some of the noblemen, young men, teenagers. Bring them back. But here's what I want. I want fine-looking, healthy young men. I want smart people, quick learners, intuitive. I mean, I want them to be the best of the best, the creme de la creme, the five-star recruits. I want the best they have brought back to be trained for 3 years so that they can serve in the king's palace, so that they can serve the king themselves. They were going to be taught the literature of the Chaldeans, the language of the Chaldeans, Daniel 1, verses 3 and 4. They were going to be brought back, and they were going to be given an intellectual and spiritual extreme makeover, okay? I mean, here's the thing. They're going to become thoroughly Babylonian. We're going to take all the Jew out of them, and they're going to become Babylonians themselves. And so the king assigned a daily portion of the same food that he ate. Now, what kind of food does a king eat? Man, anything he wants. And it's going to be the finest of the finest. Now, there are some mighty fine restaurants around these parts. You can go into, you know, within 50 miles of here, you can go to places, well, within 100, I'll say within 100 miles of here, you can go to places where you can spend easily $50 a person. And buddy, you can have some fine, fine food. Well, that's what the king had, whatever he wanted. They're going to eat the same food the king eats. They're going to drink of the same wine that he drank. They're going to be educated for 3 years and serve the king. Now, I want you to look at verse 6 and 7 of Daniel 1. Now, from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And to them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar. To Hananiah, Shadrach. To Mishael, Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. Now the little boy, he didn't know how to say their names. And so the teacher said, who were the three Hebrew children in the fiery furnace? And he said, Shadrach, Meshach, and under the bed we go. Well, all right, so his name is Abednego. Well, these young men were given a full scholarship to the University of Babylon, basically the Harvard of its day, all right? They're given Babylonian names and Babylonian clothes and the books they read and the clothes they wore, the language they spoke. Even the names they were given had one goal in mind, to cause them to think like Babylonians and act like Babylonians and live like Babylonians. Now, folks, we need to understand something. There's absolutely nothing wrong with studying in the world's universities, and nothing wrong with wearing the world's clothes or enjoying the world's culture or even speaking the world's language. Fine. But Daniel did something totally unexpected, something that eventually we all have to do if we're going to follow God and not the world. He drew a line in the sand. I'll go this far, but no farther. Verse 8, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now when Daniel was told to eat the king's food and drink the king's wine, an alarm bell went off in his heart. And he made up his mind he's going to draw a line in the sand, he's not going to cross it. Why would he draw a line at food? You know, he's got the language, the literature, the culture, the clothes, the name. Why draw a line at the food? Well, we're not exactly told why. The Bible doesn't tell us why. But there's something here. You see, it appears that Daniel's out of options. He's told he's going to eat and drink. And maybe he's not only drawing a line, maybe he's writing his own obituary. You know, disobey the king, you could be put to death for that. And yet God blessed Daniel's decision, folks. This is how I know that what Daniel did, Daniel didn't just make up himself. God blessed Daniel's decision. He didn't draw a line that was simply arbitrary. It says, it appears that this decision was in accordance with God's will. And there's a text that verifies that God gave Daniel favor in the eyes of the head of the eunuchs. The ones that were taking care of Daniel, that were in charge over Daniel, that God caused him to be in favor with that man's eyes. The point is, you never cross a line that God draws. How far can I go? This far and no farther. In every life, there's a line. On one side of that line is the world. On the other side of that line is God. There's a line drawn in the sand, and we must not cross it, regardless of the consequences. But brothers and sisters, that's the hard part, isn't it? The consequences. That's where it gets tough. So I'm going to tell you this morning how to trust and obey. I'm going to tell you this morning how you can avoid crossing that line. That's what my intention is. I'm going to share with you three things that will help you not to cross that line. Number one, resolve to guard your boundaries. Resolve to guard your boundaries. Somebody said good fences make good neighbors. I don't know if that's always the case, but I've heard that saying. You know, if you've got clear-cut boundaries, then there's no dispute and there's no issue with it. Clear-cut boundaries. If you know what the boundaries are. Do you know why some children act out? Do you know why some children act up? Because they don't have clear-cut boundaries. They don't know what the boundaries are. And they're testing the boundaries. And when you say, okay, this is as far as you can go and no further, the kids are going to see if you mean it. They're going to push. And they're going to see if you mean it. Say, how do you know, Robert? I know. They're going to do it. They're going to do it. Daniel, he had no problem reading the Babylonian books and speaking the Babylonian language, dressing in Babylonian clothes. That didn't bother him. But when it came to doing something that would appear to be putting the Babylonian king above God, he drew a line in the sand. I will not do that. These young men are slaves. But they're being trained for positions of honor and power. They're going to be given the best accommodations, the finest food and clothing. All they had to do was just go along to get along. That's all they had to do. I mean, you know, take what's given, keep your mouth shut, keep your head down. Happy days will soon be here again. Just do what you're told. There's a lot of reasons for Daniel to say yes. I mean, you know, he's on his own. Nobody back home's going to know about it. Everybody else was going to eat it. Some steak, some baked potato, wash it down with a fine Cabernet. Why not? Everything would be beautiful. But Daniel had boundaries. Somewhere those boundaries had gotten placed in his heart. Was it by his parents? Was it perhaps by the Spirit of God that God had given him some boundaries for him to follow? Remember, Daniel is a teenager. But something had happened throughout his life that prepared him for this moment. Let me say something to all the parents. One of the greatest things you can do for your children while they're young is teach them where their boundaries need to be. Teach them that no matter what else happens, you never cross those boundaries. You go this far and no farther. But there's a sad truth. If you wait, it's too late. If you wait, it's too late. You wait until you're tempted to cross the line to determine what your boundaries are. It's too late to set your boundaries then. You should have done that ahead of time. See, it's too late to decide what your ethical standards are going to be in your life when you sit down to fill out your first income tax return. You should have already made up your mind ahead of time what your ethical standards are going to be of right and wrong, of honesty and integrity. It's too late to determine what your commitment to honesty and integrity is when the money is on the table for you to take this bribe. You should have made up your mind a long time ago what you will and will not do. It's too late to decide whether or not you're going to use drugs or get drunk or crawl into the back seat of that car when you're away from home and family. It's too late to decide if you wait till you get in the situation. You should have made up your mind a long time ago. It's too late to decide what you're going to watch on television or what website you're going to visit or what YouTube videos you're going to watch when you're in your first hotel room all alone. It's too late to decide it then. You should have decided that a long time ago. What you will and will not do. What is the line in the sand that I must not cross? You've got to set those boundaries. Christian, know what your boundaries are and resolve to guard those boundaries. There's a line in the sand and you must not cross it. Number two, guard your boundaries, but then also rely on help from above. You're not in this by yourself. You may feel like you're all alone. You may feel like nobody understands. You may feel like nobody is going to know. Rely on help from above. God is always watching. The Bible says Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. Daniel 1, verse 8. Daniel had spiritual conviction, folks. Now, he evidently had grown up in a home where he was taught to love the Lord his God with all his heart, his soul, his mind, and his strength. You know, you could change Daniel's home, but you couldn't change his heart. You could change Daniel's name, but you couldn't change his nature. You could change, you could put Daniel into Babylon, but you couldn't get Babylon into Daniel. There was a God boundary around Daniel's life, and you weren't going to cross it. He wasn't going to cross it. Notice verses 8 through 14. I want to read that with you now. Verses 8 through 14. Daniel 1. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. See, there's proof. God is behind Daniel's decision. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king who has appointed you food and drink. For why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king. Boy, don't put me in this position. If you don't eat and you look worse than those others, the king's going to kill me. He's going to blame me. Don't put me in that position. So Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants just for 10 days. Now, they're going to do this for 3 years. So let's just do a 10-day test, okay? Test your servants for 10 days, and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink, and then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies, and as you see fit, so deal with your servants. So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. What happened after that? They looked better than any of the other people. Any of the other boys that ate the king's delicacies and drank the king's wine. These boys just ate vegetables and drank water for 10 days. And what happened? They looked even healthier than any of these other guys who'd been eating the richest food in Babylon. Yeah. So they let it continue. They went on with it. And we know you can read the rest of this chapter and see the rest of this story. We'll get to some of that later, but what's the difference between Daniel and his three buddies, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? What's the difference in him and them and these other boys? All of them are Jews who have been brought up to believe in God. All of them have been taught God's word. What made the difference in these four guys? Well, all of them had beliefs, but Daniel and his friends had convictions. There's a big difference between holding a belief and having a conviction. All right? Belief is what you have in your head. You know, these are the facts. This is what I believe. But conviction is what you hold in your heart. This is what I'm going to live by. A belief says I'm convinced of this truth. A conviction says I'm committed to this truth. People will argue for their beliefs, but they will die for their convictions. Last October, 8 college students at a community college in Oregon were shot and killed. Eyewitness reported that the gunman asked them, "Are you a Christian?" And those who responded with a yes were shot in the head and killed. Now, it's not so amazing about the first victim. That's amazing, but that's not the most amazing part of the story. You know what amazes me? The first person, yes, they're killed. What amazes me is the second one, and the third one, and the fourth one, and the fifth one, and the sixth one, and the seventh one, and the eighth one that said yes. That's what's amazing. They knew what was going to happen, and they said it anyway. That's conviction. That's conviction, folks. Conviction is something you're willing to die for. You live for a belief, but you'll die for a conviction. Now, don't you think for a moment that this was all Daniel's idea. Verse 9, God brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. While all these other Jewish boys may have felt they had no choice and were out of options and had to do what they were told, Daniel relied on help from above. I will not do this. Remember this, folks. When you are determined to follow God's path for your life, God will direct you to the right path. When you are determined ahead of time, I'm going to follow the path that God has for my life, God will direct you to the right path. Proverbs 3, verse 5 and 6, you know this by heart. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him. And what will He do? And He will direct your path. That's right. So remember, when you think you're out of options, with God there's always an option. When you think you're at a dead end, when you think there's no other way but the world's way, if you will rely at that moment on God to guide you, He will make the right way. He will show you the right way. But there must first be a conviction to do what God says, to do what's right, not what you want, not what's easy, not what will benefit you. To do what's right. Do what God says is right. There's a line in the sand. Don't cross it. Don't cross that line. So, the first thing is resolve to guard your boundaries. The second, rely upon help from above. And our last point this morning is remember that God is always working. God is always working. God never takes a vacation. I was looking... You know, Luke, Metcalf, you're looking a little darker. You almost had a good time in some sunshine. You know, vacations are great. God never takes a vacation. Never takes a vacation. He always is on call. He's always working. He's always with us. He's always directing. He's always in control. God is always working. I want you to notice an action that is repeated three times in this chapter. There's an action phrase that's three times that will prove what has been said so far. Verse 2, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. The Lord gave. In verse 9, now God had brought Daniel into favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. God had brought. And verse 17, and as for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel excelled them all. Now, did you notice the common action? God did something. Did you notice that? In all three of these, God did something. God gave, God brought, God gave. God did something. God has always been working. He always will be. God is working in your life. You must believe that. If you live your days without believing that God is working in your life, you're going to live a miserable, lonely life. You're going to live a life without direction, wandering aimlessly without purpose, unless you believe that God is working in your life. But you must submit to Him. You must commit to Him. You must have convictions and trust in the Lord more than what you feel for yourself or even want for yourself. It was God that caused Judah to fall to the Babylonians. It was God that caused Daniel to be one of the young men chosen to be a part of the king's family, to receive favor from his superiors. It was God that gave Daniel wisdom and understanding that was so far above and beyond his peers that he became ultimately the king's right-hand man. This slave boy, this teenager from Jerusalem, became the king's right-hand man. You know, that's not the first time that happened, is it? Remember Joseph in Egypt? See, that's not the first time that God did this. Remember Esther? Remember her? That's not the first time God did this, see? So here we have Daniel becoming the king's right-hand man. God had a plan for him, and Daniel submitted himself to God, was committed to doing the will of God. And God directed him on the right path. Now, I don't know what's going on in your life right now, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know what you're dealing with. I don't know what your struggles are. But I am sure that some of you are absolutely convinced you're in a room with no doors and no windows, with no way out. You're convinced you're out of options. And you're absolutely certain that you have no way out of the dilemma you're in except by doing what everybody else would do. By taking the path everyone else would take, by making the decisions that everyone else would make, by fighting the battle all by yourself and looking out for yourself. I don't know what your struggles are, but some of you perhaps are thinking this very same thought. Let me give you some good news. God is always working. He's always working in your life. Daniel believed that God was working, but even if Daniel hadn't believed it, God was still working. Even if Daniel didn't believe it, God was still working. God had a plan. He's always had a plan. You know, God's ultimate plan for Daniel was to take him to the highest seat of influence in the greatest nation of this ancient world at that time. That was God's plan for Daniel. But for this to happen, Daniel had to be relocated. Now, he's a teenager in Jerusalem. He's a nobleman, or the son of a nobleman, okay? He's a fine man, fine young man. But God had to relocate him and make a slave out of him to put him in the position so that he would play a key role in the preservation and the restoration of God's people at the end of that captivity and ultimately paving the way for the birth of the Savior, the coming Messiah. And so this brings us to the very last verse of this chapter, verse 21. I want you to see this. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. Now that sounds like just a detail, doesn't it? But appearances can be deceiving. This is a significant statement. Verse 21 is hitting the fast forward button, okay? Who's Cyrus? Well, he's the king of Persia. He began reigning in 539 BC. Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon have passed on from the scene. They're no longer on the scene. Babylon fell just like Israel. Who did it fall to? Why, Cyrus and the Persians. That's who it fell to. Over a 70-year period of time, one king had passed, another king came. One kingdom was gone, another one had taken its place. But one man is left standing through it all. And that man was Daniel. The same one that had made up his mind, I will not cross this line. I will not cross it. Now, I'm sure Daniel had no idea when he was a 14-year-old boy that he would be taken captive, taken prisoner to a foreign land, and over the next 70 years of his life, he would climb to the highest position in the courts of both Babylon and Persia. And then in the last years of his life, he would have more power than any other member of the Jewish race had ever known. That was Daniel. He had no idea that he would have the privilege of leading his nation back to God and ultimately helping them return to their homeland according to God's promise. God had a plan for Daniel that was so much bigger than Daniel could have ever imagined. Do you know why that happened like it did? Do you know why things worked out like they did? Because Daniel saw God's line in the sand and he would not cross it. Every day of your life, you're going to be faced with that line in the sand. Listen to me. Every day of your life, that line in the sand is going to be staring you in the face. And the world will tell you to cross that line. Money will tell you to cross that line. Sex will tell you to cross that line. Compromise will tell you to cross that line. And you may be even convinced that you're out of options, that you have no choice, and you may be thinking that you're just going to have to cross that line. But you do have a choice. God always gives you an option. Do what God says. Do what is right. Don't cross the line. God has drawn a line in the sand, and He says, come to me, stand with me. As Moses said in the long ago, who is on the Lord's side? Come to me. Jesus said not so long ago, all you that labor and are heavy laden, come unto me and I will give you rest. Jesus says, come to me. This church in the first century said, come. The Spirit and the Bride say, come. Come to me. Come to me. And stand with God. Stand with God. And God draws a line in the sand. This is how far you can go. Go no further. Go no further. If you do this, I will be with you. I will take care of you. But that line drawn in the sand by the hand of God Himself is a line that must not be crossed. Don't cross the line in the sand. Don't cross it. Make up your mind that you will resolve to set those boundaries, to know what those boundaries are, that you will rely upon help from above, and that you will remember, you're not in this by yourself. Remember, God is always working. So if there's a way we can help you today,